The Dreamliner finally starts deliveries today. The preliminary report is out on the crash at Reno, and NASA says it still doesn't know where UARs actually landed. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Monday, September 26th, 2011. The first Boeing 787 Dreamliner is being delivered today to All Nippon Airways. It's 3 years later than it was supposed to be, but obviously both sides are very happy the day has finally come. There's a celebration starting at noon Eastern Time today in Everett, Washington, which is being webcast at Boeing.com, followed by festivities tomorrow for Boeing employees. The NTSB has released a preliminary report on the crash of the modified P-51D, known as the Galloping Ghost, at the Reno Air Races on September 16th. The official injury summary is 11 fatalities, including pilot Jimmy Leeward, and 66 serious injuries. In a chilling bit of understatement, the board describes the plane as substantially damaged. The prelim confirms information which has leaked out in bits and pieces. The board confirms that photographic evidence suggests a piece of the airframe detached before the crash, and also confirms that it has a damaged data recorder, recorded telemetry from the ground crew, and multiple memory cards from an onboard camera to work with. The Leeward family and EAA have created the Jimmy Leeward Memorial Fund to benefit EAA's youth aviation education programs. Proceeds will go directly to those programs that each year help tens of thousands of young people pursue their own dreams of flight and create a new generation of aviators. Leeward was a lifelong aviator and an EAA director for more than 30 years. NASA says it's still not aware of any injuries or property damage following the reentry of UARs, the Upper Atmosphere Research Satellite, late Friday night. But the agency isn't sure just where the 6-ton spacecraft's debris hit the surface of the Earth. 26 pieces, weighing a total of 1,200 pounds, were expected to survive the dive through the atmosphere. Data indicates the satellite likely broke apart and landed in the Pacific Ocean, far off the U.S. coast. The debris footprint was expected to be up to 500 miles long. If you find what you think may be pieces, you're urged to call your local law enforcement officials. It's illegal to recover space junk for your own personal use. A TSA agent who had pleaded guilty to charges he participated in a theft ring, which stole large amounts of cash and valuables from travelers at Newark Airport, has been sentenced to 6 months of home confinement and 3 years probation. The Star-Ledger reports that Al Raimi received the reduced sentence because he cooperated with government officials by wearing a recording device and helping to catch his supervisor and another person involved in the operation. USA Today reports the three stole money and other valuables from bags as passengers cleared security at Newark. Raimi had said he had paid off supervisor Michael Arado, who allowed the thefts to continue. Arado, who according to MyCentralJersey.com also admitted to stealing from passengers, was sentenced to 30 months in prison in June. Both he and Raimi must also pay over $24,000 in restitution to their victims. Demonstrating the value of a good relationship with your workforce, Southwest Airlines says a tentative agreement on integration of seniority lists has been reached between SWAPA, the union representing pilots of Southwest Airlines, and ALPA, representing AirTran pilots. Members of each union will now review the proposed agreement and put it to a ratification vote, which could happen in 4 to 6 weeks. Southwest Airlines closed on its acquisition of AirTran Holdings back on May 2nd. Up next on ANN, are you ready for 100 VLL? A new prop shaves 14 pounds off Cessna's Skycatcher. And a bizarre form of vandalism strikes Southwest Airlines. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Monday, September 26th. I'm Paul Plack. The FAA has approved a new piston aviation fuel as a drop-in replacement for 100 low-lead. It's called 100 VLL, or very low-lead, but reduces the content of tetraethyl lead, TEL, by only about 19% compared to 100 low lead. How big a deal this really is depends on who's talking. The aviation alphabet groups who've united in support for the continued availability of leaded aviation fuel will call it a big step forward. Environmental groups will likely see it as another stall tactic, 40 years after auto fuel in the U.S. went unleaded. The decision to allow the new fuel as a drop-in replacement came after the FAA determined that even 100 low lead often contains less TEL than is allowed by spec, if the base octane of the refined fuel or other additives allows it to still meet minimum octane requirements. So yes, 100 low lead at times is already 100 very low lead, and this may be no change at all. Cessna says it has now passed the 100 delivery mark with its Model 162 Skycatcher. The 100th copy has been delivered to Sporties for a giveaway promotion next year. The company also announced that effective with serial number 108, a new one-piece composite prop from Macaulay, designed specifically to match the Skycatcher's Continental 0200D lightweight engine, is standard equipment. The prop is said to cut 14 pounds compared to the aluminum prop used on the plane up to this point. Owners of what are now, I guess, legacy Skycatchers will be offered the upgrade option. Someone's messing with our heads again. Federal authorities are working with Southwest Airlines to determine how some of the carrier's 737s were marked with a chemical that does not appear until the airplane's APUs are activated, heating the skin of the aircraft. The writings have been described by some as either Arabic or Arabic-style symbols, according to a report from KNX Radio in Los Angeles. The airline has instructed its employees not to discuss the matter with the media. The airline officially calls the incidents vandalism, but will not specify how many airplanes or people are involved. TSA and the FBI are both working with the airline on the matter. Aircraft movements are being closely monitored, and any employee with knowledge of the incidents is being asked to come forward. The Canadian Air and Space Museum has received at least a temporary reprieve from an eviction notice which prompted it to move exhibits out of a hangar at former Canadian Forces Base Toronto. The hangar was built in 1929 for de Havilland, making it historically significant to aviation buffs. But the landlord told the museum and 65 other tenants they needed to leave so the property can be converted to a hockey facility. Museum CEO Robert Cohn says he hopes to have the building placed on Canada's list of historic buildings considered too important to lose. Pilots and passengers flying into Indianapolis International Airport will soon start seeing construction on what is being called one of the largest airport-based solar farms in North America. The Indianapolis Airport Authority says it has selected ET Energy Solutions to develop a solar farm on airport property. Construction could begin as early as this fall. The solar farm will include 41,000 solar panels on ground-mounted racking systems that will fill nearly 60 acres of land near the airport exit from I-70. The plant is expected to produce more than 15 million kilowatt-hours of electric energy per year. That's enough to power more than 1,200 average American homes. And finally today, the Ken Brock Freedom Fly-In is in the books for another year. I'm a little sunburned and my lips are chapped, and I'll be coughing up desert dust for a couple days, but what a great weekend experiencing the ultimate low and slow LSA. The late Ken Brock was a Benson gyrocopter dealer who made enough improvements to the machine that Dr. Benson told him he could no longer call it a gyrocopter. Ken is honored each summer at the El Mirage Dry Lake by PRA Chapter 1, the first ever affiliated chapter of the Popular Rotorcraft Association, and that chapter was created by Ken. I think Ken would have been proud of the group we had there this year, if a little disappointed in the turnout. The U.S. Bureau of Land Management is escalating pressures which could end this heritage event. If you've ever thought about going, the weekend of September 28th through 30th, 2012, might be a great time. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, CFI Bob Miller distills the lessons we can learn from the fate of a Mooney pilot who canceled his IFR flight plan too soon. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iTunes, Odeo, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.